Anywhere you want.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that.
Well, welcome everybody, and thank you for inviting Tomas and myself in. You know, and thank you to the Lutheran Church for trusting a group of alcoholics with keys to their church. Who would have guessed? Thank you, Gil, for the fine hospitality, the nice room, and the dinner. Thank you very much. I was late. I got lost. That's been the story of my life. Being lost. You know, I'm going to hope to share my experience, my strength, and my hope with everybody tonight. And it's not all peachy keen. You know, you're looking at an example of a colossal human failure. You know, that's how I got here. As a result of my drinking and my drug use, I had wrecked my life. I was a zero. I was a failure as a husband. I was a failure as a father. I had two little kids. I was a failure as an employee. Let's see, how else could I be a failure? I was just totally bankrupt. Spiritually, mentally, monetarily, every which way a man can be zero. That's how I got here. But guess what? Alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know, I lived in delusion land. You know, I thought that I was hip, slick, and cool. You know, when I got here, I had hair. Long hair. I was playing in a band. You know, and I kept telling myself that I'm A-okay. But in my deepest heart of my soul, I knew I wasn't okay. I was a phony. I was a chameleon. I was the actor on the stage playing my part. And I can't say I hit bottom, because I really truly believed that I could continue drinking. I was 34 years old. My wife had moved out of the house with the kids. Boy, I'm just thinking about it. I haven't thought about that in a long time. And that was okay. She moved out. That means nobody's going to be bugging me about my drinking. Matter of fact, I took all the racks out of my refrigerator. And I had two friends, two guys that were still talking to me. One was Gordy, my friend Gordy. He owned a Japanese restaurant. And we were friends because he would let me buy beer on credit. So I would get my old pickup truck and I would load up on beer and I'd load it into the fridge. You know. And my other friend was from my job. When I wasn't playing in the band, I had a little rinky-dink job selling cable, going door to door, signing people up for cable TV. Back when it was $8.50 for basic cable, and there was like 14 channels. Wow. My two sons were little guys. And whenever my ex-wife would trust me with the kids, she'd bring them over. Big mistake. You know, don't leave your kids alone with an alcoholic. You know, I'm surprised they survived. You know, I've got two sons. They're in their 40s now. They're successful restaurateurs over in Sedona, Arizona. And thank God I got sober. Thank God I got sober. Yeah, they survived my drunkenness. I remember one time I took my oldest son, Tom, with me. I wanted to go for a swim. And I was swimming And I left them on the edge of the pool there, and I'm swimming, enjoying myself, into me. You know, selfishness and self-centeredness, that's the root of my defects of character. It's always about me. And I saw a little blur at the end of the pool. You know, I go, well, that wasn't there the last lap I swam. That's weird. And it was my little son. He was down at the bottom of the pool. You know, and I rushed over and I pulled him out, and he was like choking and coughing and stuff. Man, he's still afraid of the water. You know, I remember one time there's a place by the house, a lake, Pine Flat Dam. You used to be able to walk on the dam. And they had like a turnstile, you know, I don't know why there was a turnstile, but I got the brilliant idea it would be fun for him to swing on the turnstile. So I said, Tommy, hop on that turnstile, I'll swing you around. You know, and wow, Dad, that was fun. You know, and then I looked over and I had swung him over a cliff. There was a cliff on the, you know. Did I stop drinking? Did I think I had a problem? No, you know, I got here, I don't know, by God. God brought me here. You know, my family was Catholic. You know, I remember going to church with my grandmother back then, back in the dinosaur days. Mass was in Latin. You know, I didn't know what they were talking about, you know, but I did feel a little bit of peace in there. You know, I didn't know what that was about. Well, I was selling cable door to door, drinking like a fiend, drugging like a fiend, hanging on to my job, barely hanging on to my, what am I kidding myself? One of the things, the assignments that I got was they switched to new equipment. And at that time I was sleeping on my best friend's couch. And he lived in a pretty nice neighborhood. And I had to install this this device in one of his neighbor's house, and he was never there. So I got the brilliant idea of signing the paperwork that he received his things, and I'd just keep an eye out when he showed up. And being the alcoholic that I am, I forgot all about it. You know, and then about a month later, my boss is frantic. He said, Vic, there's this guy threatening to sue the cable company. We say we installed his stuff, but we never installed it. So I pulled his receipt and I went to his house and I made a case that, look, you got the equipment. He said, no. He says, this guy was a vice president or president of some corporation, you know. He says, I made the guy pull out his wallet. And he says, your signature by fluke matched his. So I was adamant he was lying to us. I go, oh God, you know, the first time I ever came clean, I said, you know, I did that. He goes, you did? Yeah. You know, they didn't fire me, but I know there was a discussion about sending this guy to a treatment center for alcoholism. So the other friend I had was an Mormon guy, Richard Sayer. So one day he shows up at my house. He says, Vic, he says, you need a break. You need a vacation from your life. I said, yeah, I do, man. He says, well, I know a place where you can go for 28 days. And they have a bed, you can, four, three meals a day. He says, and here's the good part. I go, really? There's more? He said, yeah, you could go on disability and collect a check. I said, that's for me. Sign me up. So my girlfriend at the time, I was married and I had a girlfriend, and she was a nude, a model, belly dancer, and she was my support system in treatment. So she drove me down there and took me in there, and I signed the paperwork, and I thought I was going to a retreat. Yeah, they even took a picture of me. I felt important. They took a they took a picture of me, you know. I go, why are they taking a picture of me? I didn't do anything wrong. Well, I didn't get caught. And so I was in the treatment center. And after about 3 or 4 days, I started, I detoxed and started coming to my senses. And I figured out I was in a recovery home, the Ark, in Clovis. And I didn't like it. I'm not an alcoholic. I wanted to bail. So I was getting ready to leave, and they would bring these, what do they call it? H&I guys in to talk to us, right? So I'm getting ready to leave. It's like winter time, December, I don't know if anybody knows, Fresno gets really cold in December. Used to get really cold and used to get really foggy, like foggy and cold. It was one of those nights, but I wanted the heck out of that place. And so he saw me getting ready to leave, and he goes, what are you doing, man? I go, I'm out of here. He says, where are you going? I said, I'm walking back home. He says, you know, where do you live? I told him, he says, that's like 5 miles away. It's cold out there. I go, yeah. He goes, why don't you just, you know, stick around for dinner, have dinner. And you got a warm bed down there, down the hallway. Stick around for dinner, go to bed and leave in the morning. I said, that sounds like a real good idea. So I did that. And I guess he was keeping an eye on me because the next day he was there. He says, oh, I see your hair still. I said, yeah, breakfast. He said, do you drink? Did you drink yesterday? I said, hell no, I'm here. He said, that's how we do it. That's how we do this deal, one day at a time. And I never forgot that. And we had all those deals, you know, family group day. None of my family ever showed up. You know, the new model belly dancer was my support system, you know. And she didn't want me to stop drinking either. But I stuck around. And it was some of the people on H&I that kept me there. The people from the outside that would come and talk to us. There was a guy by the name of Father Bernie, Episcopalian minister that sobered up. He'd go in and talk to us. And then, you know, he was talking about, you know, you'll die if you drink. That's the end result. If you're an alcoholic, there's only one result of alcoholism and drugs, and that's death. I believe that, but back then I didn't. I was 34, I had long hair. I'm not gonna drive. And so he walked up to me. He says, is anybody that doesn't believe me? And I don't, I'm young, I'm strong. And so he walked over to me and he put his hand on my shoulder. And he said, group, I wanna introduce you to Vic. He said, Vic is 70 years old. He's here because he can't change his pants. He can't go to the restroom. He can't eat. He's got wet brain as a result of his drinking. I mean, I can still feel his hand right there. He said, you know, he's here as a result. He's a wet brain alcoholic. You know, and the room went dead silent. You know, it's those things that old timers tell you that, you know, 35 years ago, I still hear Father Bernie telling me that. And I believe him, you know. So got ready to discharge me after 28 days. And the doctor calls me in to the discharge, and my nude model belly dancer. And he just looks at her. He doesn't look to me. He just looks at her. He says, Carrie, he says, I want to let you know that this is one of the sickest guys that's ever come through our rehab. And my advice to you is if he doesn't go to 90 meetings in 90 days If he doesn't get a sponsor, if he doesn't start working the steps, you run for the hills. And I'm like sitting there going, you know, I'm in the room. I can hear all this. He says, I know, I'm talking to her. What about me? So anyway, I got out of that deal. And did I do 90 meetings in 90 days? No. Did I get a sponsor? No. Did I work the steps? And so 30 days later, I'm walking with a paper bag with all of my belongings, not knowing where I'm going. She gave me the boot. She says, I don't want anything to do with you. I liked you better when you were drinking. I didn't know where to go. So back then there was payphone booths. So I call up Gordy. Gordy, you got to come pick me up. So Gordy comes and picks me up. And he goes, where do you want to go? I didn't have anywhere to go, guys. I don't know. Take me to the Alano Club. Because that's where they took us to my first introduction to AA was at the Alano Club. And back then they smoked in the meetings too. Oh man, that was like a pool hall in there. I hated it. I don't smoke cigarettes. And so so anyway, so he took me down to the Alano Club, you know, and that's where I started my journey of sobriety, you know, all by myself, no family, no nude belly dancer, nothing, just meetings and me. And so I went for a while to meetings. I didn't get a sponsor. And finally, I was miserable, totally miserable. But I was dead set on proving that damn doctor wrong, you know. Oh, I forgot to, I left out one part about the nude belly dancer. When she kicked me out, she said, I need a little break. I go, oh, I could give you a break. She goes, well, I'm talking about a year. She says, why don't you come back a year from now, after you're a year sober, and we'll see where we're at. I go, really? She goes, yeah. So that's when I called Gordy. I forgot that part. Key point. So anywho, I'm there at the Alano Club, just going to meetings, tolerating the cigarette smoke, loving all the AA coffee, because that was the only buzz I got, still today. And so I hear people talking. I learned in rehab that you look for a sponsor that talks about God and the steps. I learned that in these rooms, there's two types of people. There's people that are into the solution, people are into the problem. And people that are into the solution talk about God, talk about the steps. So I kept my ear open in all those meetings. And finally, I heard Tomas speak. And some of you here might know him. He's been my sponsor since I asked him. And the first guy asked to sponsor me was in rehab. Guy by the name of John, he was a parole officer. I said, I can relate to that. Will you sponsor me? He said, no, dude, I only got 2 years sober. You're too sick for me. So I didn't want to ask anybody to sponsor me. That was like pretty humiliating. So I thought I'd trick Tomas. I knew that a sponsor helped you work the steps. So after the meeting, I cornered him and I said, Tomas, excuse me. But do you think you could help me work the steps? And he said, Vic, I'd be happy to be your sponsor. Well, he sponsors a million guys. You know, I'm one of the millions. And so so I got a sponsor. And we started working the steps. You know, started to work 1, 2, and 3. And I had a tough time with 3. I knew my life was unmanageable because, you know, homeless, driving a borrowed truck. Well, no, correction, stolen truck. When you borrow something, you don't give it back, it's stolen. No registration, no license. I mean, just a mess. And so we started working the steps. So I knew one was pretty easy. I'm pretty unmanageable. Still am. And step two, I knew I was insane, you know. I went to a Catholic Jesuit University of Santa Clara, and, you know, there's Jesuit priests living around and Catholic studies, blah, blah, blah. And I remember I went to this one party, and they gave me something that just blew my mind. You know, I went like psychotic for like a week. I thought I was Jesus, you know. I was like blessing everybody. And I was like, I knew I was crazy. You know, normal people don't think like that. You know, so when I saw that step two in the insanity part, I knew I was busted. I knew that I didn't think I was in the right place. I think there was probably some crazy people in the room, but it wasn't me, you know. So restore me to sanity, God. You know, I had rejected God way back in the Catholic institution I was at school. Because I wanted to have fun. I wanted to drink. I wanted to party. I wanted to chase girls. I want to have fun. Yeah. At the end of my drinking, there was no fun in drinking. So I made the decision to ask God to help me with that. You know, I asked God to help me with that problem. You know, and then came the inventory part. Step four. Oh. So I've been going to meetings, working step three for about a year. And all the old timers knew that. So there was a guy by the name of Ardess. Ardess, big guy. Some people had called him the step Nazi. So he would approach me in meetings and hey, Mick, yeah, Art, you worked that four step yet? No, actually no. Why not? And I just walk away. And that kept happening. So then I started changing my meetings, you know. I thought, what's wrong with this guy? Is he gay? Is he chasing me or what? You know, I did. I was like avoiding Ardess. And he would show up at these meetings. Hey, Rick, you worked that hard step? Jeez. See, but that's what this alcoholic needs. Because I don't do anything unless there's some incentive or motivation or somebody tells me to do it in the program. And so finally I said, Art, I don't know how to do it. It's in the big book. Are you some kind of dummy? I go, well, yeah. He said, well, can you make lists? I go, lists? He goes, yeah. Can you make lists, dummy? I go, yeah, I can make a list. What are you talking about? He says, okay, why don't you try? He didn't tell me to do it. He said to try to do it. So that was the key. Why don't you try to make lists and start off with all the addresses that you can remember that you looked at? And then you make a list of all the schools that you attended. Dude, that list doesn't sound like bad. Four step doesn't sound bad. And then he said, make a list of all your resentments. I said, now this is getting good. I got a lot of resentments. There was like 176 resentments on it. That was the longest list. He said, write a list of all your schools. I go, I can do that. He says, okay, now for the sex list. I go, sex list? He goes, yeah. He says, make a list of every everything you've had sex with. Man, woman, animal, you can write the list of things. I go, things? Yeah. That one wasn't so fun. He says, then when you're done with those lists, you go to the big books, and it shows you the format on how to do it. You know, so it took me a week or so, but I did it. And then next was the fifth step. And by this time, I'd grown to trust Tomas, because Tomas is probably the most loving, giving, non-judgmental guy that you'll ever meet in the whole wide world. You know, I trusted him. I love Tomas. So I told him, hey, I did my fourth step. I'm ready for the fifth. And I heard guys say, oh, well, I did my fifth step. We spent like a day with my sponsor or 4 hours with my sponsor. You know, I guess it happens. Didn't happen to me. He says, okay, Vic, you ready to do your fifth step? I go, yeah. He says, meet me at the Alano Club 20 minutes before the meeting. I go, 20 minutes? Doesn't he understand how important a life I have and how pivotal this fifth step is? And we need to spend at least 20 minutes. So I show up 20 minutes before. And, you know. And so we meet out in front. It's a nice summer day. Hand it my fourth. He reads it. He goes, you want to talk about it? I go, not really. He reads it some more. He says, now I want you to take it, tear it up, and this is in the past. Now we're going to move on to the sixth step. That was it. That was it. I thought, whew, that wasn't so bad. You know, so I started on the sixth, seventh, and eighth step. And, you know, the promises said before you're halfway through, some of the miracles, some of the promises come true. And that was certainly true in my case. Because the first miracle I experienced was I took that stolen truck up to one of the lakes up, the Pine Flat Lake. It was summertime, no AC, it was hot. And I went swimming with all my clothes. And I was driving back soaking wet, you know, driving back to Fresno. It felt pretty good. And then I realized something. I had not thought about drinking the whole day or drugs. This is odd. Because it was hard not to drink. And I hadn't thought about drinking or using drugs at all. Because if I wasn't using drugs or drinking, I was thinking about it. I was obsessed. I had that obsession. It was always in my head. I had to like fight the urge. Do I drink? Don't drink. It's gone. Poof. Like that, like to this day, it feels like I was never an alcoholic. I have freedom from that. I could go to Costco. You know, Costco sells most of the product they sell at Costco is alcohol. I mean, they sell a lot of alcohol, and I love Costco. It's like, it's not even there. It's not even there. I mean, folks, if you haven't experienced a miracle, if you're new in this program, work the steps. It's a recipe like making a cake. If you follow the recipe, you're going to have a cake. If you follow the steps, you're going to have a spiritual awakening. I never knew what that was. Now I do. You know, for me, it was more of the educational variety. The room never lit up. I never felt God's presence. It was more of the educational. It happened gradually, gradually. It's still happening. I'm still a work in progress. As my friend Bobby can attest, being lost coming down here. I'm still a work in progress. I'm not perfect, you know. So the amends part was the next hurdle. Because I had a lot of amends to make. Tons. I mean, my sponsor would tell me, he would say, well, Vic, you know, you don't turn a ship around on a dime. You make slow course corrections. He says, a life full of self-will, lying, cheating, stealing, doesn't correct overnight. It takes time. Be gentle with yourself. Go easy with yourself. You know? And so at the top of the list for those amends was my dad. Because my dad was an alcoholic. He was extremely abusive, you know. I could talk about it today, but it was a pretty rough childhood, you know. He grew up old school, you know. He would beat me with whatever he could get his hands on. I was always on eggshells, you know. I feared the man. I hated the man. I couldn't wait to get out of the house. I mean, matter of fact, I was telling somebody earlier that, you know, I ran away from home once, you know. I packed a little knapsack and I snuck out in the middle of the night. I didn't know where I was going. you know, the next day I'm like wandering around, my dad's driving the neighborhood, he finds me, whips me, takes me home. I go to my room, it's empty. It's empty, all my brothers had already confiscated all my stuff. They were fighting over my stuff as soon as they woke up and found out I was gone. That's the kind of household I grew up in. It was very dysfunctional, you know. But those amends to the dad, I never thought I would make them, because I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of rage towards that man, towards my father, you know. And so, you know, he was a good dad. He did the best he could. I mean, his dad, you know, left. He grew up by himself, you know. So he did the best he could do, like we all do. You know, I'm sure my kids are going to have stories about me. But, you know, finally came the amends to the dad. So I called him up because I had so much anger, not about meeting him face to face, but that I would lose it. I would maybe say things that I didn't want to say. And so I called him up. I said, "Dad." He said, "Yeah, son." I said, "I want to tell you something." He says, "Oh, okay." I said, "I want to tell you that I was not the best son. I wasn't the best son. I want to tell you that I lied to you. I want to tell you that I stole from you. I want to tell you that I spoke behind your back and I spoke ill of you. And I was wrong. And I apologize. And from this phone call forward, I'm going to try to be the best son that I could be." It was just like this room, dead silence. You know? And he says, "Son, you don't know how long I've been waiting to hear those words from you." "No, I'm sorry. I beat the crap out of you. It's such abuse." "No, nothing." So when you make amends, I learned that you do them for you. Because what happened to me is the same thing that happened like when I was coming down that from Pine Flat. That the resentment that I had to my dad, the anger that I had to my dad was gone. I could visit him. I could hug him. I ended up taking care of him. You know, cleaning up his messes. I ended up having to put him in a memory care unit. You know. But that's all because of God in this program, you know. And I became a single parent in sobriety, you know. And I wasn't a youngster when I got her, you know. I had a little baby daughter, you know. She was like 6 months old when I got her out of the system, you know. And I didn't know how to be a dad because I was a weekend dad. I worked in Los Angeles. I had a place in LA, and I had a place in Fresno. I'd commute. I was a weekend dad for my two sons, but as far as a full-time daddy, no, I didn't know what the clue what I was doing. I remember when the court officer handed me my daughter, she wet her pants, her diaper thing, and I was like handing her back. "Oh, she's wet." "No, she's yours. You're going to learn." I did learn, you know. Next month, my daughter graduates from Fresno State with honors, so she's doing good. You know, I give credit to God, not me. Not me. It's the man upstairs, you know. That's why I love that we're meeting in a church. You know, God's here right now. I can feel his presence. You know, I can feel God's love and God's grace because I've experienced it. You know, grace is receiving something that you're not worthy of receiving. And the life I have today is just because of God's grace. He's entrusted me, you know. I have all the things that outwardly would appear to make a man successful. You know, a beautiful home, beautiful cars, a driver's license. Yeah. Oh, one other amends I had to make. And this is another one. One of the hardest amends I had to make was IRS. I hadn't filed taxes in years and years and years. I thought I was going to tax prison. So what does God do? He puts a sponsee in my life, like many. But this sponsee was very special. He was a CPA. So finally, I had the courage to say, hey, Doug, right there, can you help me with my taxes? Done. You know? And how much time do I have? About 3 minutes? 3 minutes? You want me to sing? No. So step 12, carrying the message. You know, that's what it's all about, is helping another alcoholic. I said, I've got all these things that would appear to make a man successful, but what I feel makes me successful, what brings joy in my life, I wake up today looking forward to every day. I feel like a little kid. I act like a little kid. Ask her. I feel like a little kid because you remember when kids are little, they want to play all the time? You don't have to like talk them into it. They want to play. Hey, can Johnny come out and play? Yeah. That's how it feels today. That's how it feels today. You know, happy, joyous, and free. No matter what goes down out there, because there's a lot of negative things out there, the joy and the peace and the serenity in here doesn't go away. And that's what I try to give away. That's what I try to do with my newcomers and my sponsees whenever they're in the program, that it does get better. That I'm nobody special. I'm not that bright. But this deal works if you work it. You know, and all you have to do, like that guy told me that foggy night, is do it one day at a time and keep coming back. So I thank you all for listening. I don't know what the heck I said. I never prepare for these deals, but thank you very much. Love you all.